Hello, I am Hope.
And I'm Isabel, and you're listening to Far Beyond,
the podcast where we delve into enigmatic stories from the past.
And today we have a very special guest speaker. We've changed from a location special episode, and now we have a guest speaker.
Yes, a fairy novelist from a place in the south. And he makes whimsical woodcut-inspired illustrations for the tales that he weaves in his time where he's in the forest, usually smoking a pipe. And his name happens to be Forrest Librand, and we'll attach his work to the episode description as well as put some info on the Far Beyond podcast Instagram. His favorite color is natural green. And he is a self-described mossy stone. So he's a very knowledgeable guest speaker who has a lot of background in regards to fantasy, mythology, and the creation of worlds. So Forrest, welcome onto Far Beyond.
Welcome to Far Beyond.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
We only bring on specialists, for our episodes. So Forrest is very
informed.
Well,
I became a specialist as of yesterday afternoon, so...
New specialist.
Even better.
This is a story. This is a historical, episode that I've known about for years. But diving into it deeper in preparation for this was very illuminating. Lots of crazy stuff going on in this one. So this is about today. We're going to be talking about the Cottingley Fairies.
Yes, we know these things.
I'm so excited. Okay.
Listeners, if you're not aware of this, be prepared. The Cottingley Fairies, we know a little bit, but this will be good. This is a mystery we've been meaning to delve into. So, Forrest, thank you.
Absolutely.
Take the stage.
All right. I thought I'd begin us with a little excerpt from a poem by Joseph Rodman Drake, The Culprit Fae. I'll be putting on my English accent for the reading. 'Tis the hour of fairy ban and spell. The wood tick has kept the minutes well. He has counted them all with click and stroke, deep in the heart of the mountain oak. And he has awakened the sentry elf, who sleeps with him in the haunted tree, to bid him ring the hour of 12, and call the fays to their revelry. 12 small strokes on his tinkling bell, 'twas made of the white snail's pearly shell. Midnight comes, and all is well. Hither, hither, wing your way. 'Tis the dawn of the fairy day.
Spelly, very spelly. Very, very spelly.
That.
I felt like the world of fairy was being conjured throughout this
poem.
Yeah,
I saw it rising around.
Well, that's kind of what happened here in this situation is... I guess it's the Edwardian era, 1917, World War I's going on. But people in England are still very nostalgic about fairies and Victorian obsession with fairies.
Is this because they were kind of fighting against all of the coal and darkness that was coming from the Industrial Revolution? Like kind of seeing a loss of the green?
Also like the war?
Yeah.
And war.
Isn't that a thing? I feel like I've read about that or learned about that in school where people started making all this sort of like... art and happy things and to like combat the
negativity of
mass like
genocide.
World wars.
I think that's true. A lot of escapism and fantasy, obviously. Two very famous fantasy writers, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, survived World War I and wrote stories of hope and to combat a lot of the darkness they experienced. But so we'll just dive right into this story. This whole thing originates with two cousins playing by a brook, and they would claim that they saw fairies down by this brook in Cottingley, a village in West Yorkshire, England. So eventually they borrowed their dad's camera and took pictures of themselves with the fairies dancing around them. So
haven't we all done that though? Like, didn't you guys, like when you were Isabel, we did that all the time. We have a number of...
Yeah, we're always by the brook side,
Making movies of fairies, actually.
Absolutely.
We had our iPods, so we didn't have to steal our dad's
camera. Yeah, the iPod Touch.
Or an iPad, which was
we filmed
funny.
On iPads as well. This is lovely. Well, we'll have to compare some of these photos these girls took to our research as children to see if there's some similarities.
Yes,
So these girls would take photos of fairies. They had this like definite proof.
Yeah, was,
which is and the world was listening.
Right. Well, and the reason it got out, you know, so they show these pictures to their parents, and their dad's like, "Oh, you just are playing around, and you made this up. These are like cutouts."
Mm-hmm.
One of the girls, Elsie. I should introduce the girls: Elsie Wright and Frances Griffiths. Elsie's mother attended a meeting of the Theosophical Society. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the Theosophists.
Ooh. Does that have anything to do with the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, or like no? I'm not sure. Is it like a Greek philosophical society?
The word is definitely Greek. It's hard for me to kind of understand what it is. It like late 1800s originated. It's sort of Hinduism mixed with the idea of evolution and God, and
yeah.
So it was sort of a new religion that sort of arrived on the scene that claimed to try to be scientific, but also all about ascendancy and evolving.
Which is kind of lovely. Bringing
great.
That synthesis of science and magic and spirituality.
Well, and that's what was so appealing about these photos. So Elsie's mom went to a meeting, right, and she brought these photographs. The lecture that night was on fairy life. And so after the meeting...
Isabel, we should join this religion.
I know. And like, the more you say about this, I want to join.
Yeah. I mean, this is what it was in 1919. I don't know what it is today.
Yeah, is
if
it
it's still out
around?
There. I'm not sure.
You know what? Yeah, let's open another
Is there chapter. A church in Brooklyn? Can I go?
Oh, I'm sure.
Possibly. I think it started in New York, so maybe so.
Did it start in New York? Wow. Okay.
Wow. All right.
There might be some roots there. We'll have to do another destination episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this girl's mother takes
right,
this.
Polly Wright, Elsie's mother, starts waving these photographs around to the speaker afterwards, and they loved seeing that. Remember, this is like 1919. This is, photographs are black and white, kind of grainy, kind of blurry. Put that in your mind.
Yeah.
Camera
technology, you guys, there was no Photoshop. This is just, is this film? This is film, or is this not even film yet? Or what are they working with?
I mean, it is film. One of the daughter's fathers had a red room, whatever you call them, a developing room.
Mm.
So they were photographs.
But even photos were still something that was like a little bit crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, right, and people didn't know to what extent how much you could fake things, right? I mean, Joseph
yes.
Stalin famously cut dissidents out of old photos. They would do the original Photoshop, and like people he, you know, murked.
You could collage
yeah,
it.
Yeah, get rid of them.
You guys, like, imagine collaging.
Erase them
yeah.
from history. So anyway.
Interesting.
But again, this was a divisive issue. Everyone who saw these photos, half of them were like, "That's obviously fake," and some girls playing around, and others were like, "These are fairies. Oh my gosh, we can finally see fairies." So these pictures circulated, and attracted the attention of Edward Gardner, who was one of the movement's leaders. And he recognized the potential significance of the photographs, saying, "The fact that two young girls had not only been able to see fairies, which others had done, I should be English right now, but had actually, for the first time ever, been able to materialize them at a density sufficient for their images to be recorded on a photographic plate, meant that it was possible that the next cycle of evolution was underway."
This ties directly into the idea of, you know, different energy levels and different realities like existing on top of each
right.
other, because that's the whole basis of the fae world, you know, like there's
mm-hmm.
If you guys go back to our first episode, we talked about the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and how they believed in green ray elementals, which were basically fairies that existed on a higher energy plane. So I can see where this Edward guy is going with this.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool. Yeah, well, and it's interesting to me that it starts with these girls who are just, you know, they're seeing fairies just innocently enough. But then we have someone come in with an agenda, not necessarily, I'm not saying that as, you know, negatively, but he has a lens with which he sees the world, which is that we're evolving. And so he's like, oh, this present of these small spiritual beings might show the next step of evolution
yeah.
in his
might
world
fit
view.
Into my yeah
right
yeah so there's definitely an agenda
what he's
we
developing
must,
yeah
right
as much as we want to believe in fairies we still have to
well,
be logical.
Everyone's coming at this with their own, you know, worldview and what they want to be true. Mm-hmm. So, these pictures came to the attention of a writer, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Probably familiar with him.
Oh, yes.
I think I've heard of him.
He wrote Eat, Pray, Love, correct?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. The original British one.
He did the screenplay for the movie.
Yeah, I am very familiar with him. Wonderful, wonderful.
But actually, he was the author of the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Scandalosa. I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard Jack in office.
Your conversation really is most entertaining. If you would close the door on your way out.
For people who might be sitting there like, wow, they are,
yeah,
they
don't,
are really
don't believe
outrageous.
A lot of what Hope and I say, except for the things we tell you are true.
Yeah.
Like witches, yeah.
Yes. Witches are always true. Okay. So this guy is into deductive reasoning. He is a researcher. I mean, he wrote Sherlock Holmes, hello, and he's believing in fairies? What? I trust him implicitly.
That's why he's such a strange wrinkle to this story, because he's, you know, elementary, my dear Watson, but he is, Arthur Conan Doyle, in real life, was a spiritualist, so he attended seances and
believed
in ectoplasm, yeah.
My boy.
All that stuff.
I did not know this. Wow.
No, I didn't know that either.
Wow. Interesting. I thought he was all about the facts.
Sherlock Holmes is, yeah.
Like Sherlock. Yeah, I thought that, wow, so he's like believing in magic and stuff, and he's writing his book about reality.
Really, like, writing Sherlock?
He did get bored of the character and tried to kill him off.
Yeah, right, and then people
were angry, so he, yeah.
Maybe he came to, like, resent.
Wouldn't that be annoying?
Deductive and, like, scientific Sherlock was, and he tried to kill him. Yeah.
Yeah, but then his creation took on a life of its own, and he couldn't control it anymore.
Maybe he just wanted to write those
stories. That's like a great
responsibility.
Yeah, maybe he just got tired of materialistic, empirical, hard, bare fact, and wanted to and reverted to some sort of nostalgic, imaginative state, perhaps.
As we all do. It's interesting to see how, like, as people get older and stuff, do tend to move more towards, like, spirituality in a lot of instances. Like, wasn't that the case of, like, C.S. Lewis as well?
Yes, he went from being an atheist to becoming a Christian and Anglican. And Tolkien was a Catholic. A lot of these guys...
Were very spiritual.
Yeah, I mean, they had to get through the horrors of World War I. They saw the worst things any man could see,
And Doyle as well. I just think, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to be too dismissive. I don't really subscribe to anything in particular, but, you know, when you see, like, geniuses, people who are the great artists, the great thinkers of our time, really, you know, take hold of some sort of philosophy or some sort of belief, it does make you wonder, because it's like, I'm definitely not as smart as them, but they decided that this was true and they followed it. So how did he fight? How did Doyle fight for the validity of these photos?
So Doyle, I don't even know if he was a theosophist, however you say that, but he was a spiritualist, and he and Gardner collaborated throughout the coming years on this little project. He saw these photos and was, like, blown away by them. He said, the recognition of their existence will jolt the material 20th century mind out of its heavy ruts in the mud and will make it admit there is a glamour and mystery to life. Having discovered this, the world will not find it so difficult to accept that spiritual message supported by physical facts which have already been put before it. So Doyle and Gardner... Well, I don't know if Doyle ever met these girls. It was unclear to me in the research, but Edward Gardner went to Cottingley several times. Doyle wrote an article about these photographs, and then he eventually wrote a book about these photographs and the girls and new endeavors to meet these fairies. He and Gardner sent a clairvoyant man, some guy who's a clairvoyant, a strong psychic, according to Doyle, down to spend time with the girls by the stream and just kind of observe, like, you know, imagine Jane Goodall or naturalists sitting in the jungle trying to...
But you're not comparing the little girls to chimpanzees.
No, no, no. They're the scientists. So it's like we're, you know, this discovery of like in this special place, we sit and we watch and we wait and for these, you know, animals to come along and we observe them. And
So the fae were the chimpanzees.
Yes. Yeah. If that wasn't clear,
they're
sorry.
They're taking a very naturalist approach to...
They're trying to be scientific. They're implying an investigative process here.
As you should.
Right, because they're really trying to prove this. They're taking it seriously. Mm-hmm.
They think there's a chance. They think there's actually a chance, you know? Like, this technology, like, it wasn't like nowadays where we see Photoshop things all the time and we have, like, AI technology that makes things that look real. It's like, these photos were
and
very special.
The girls who took them attested that they were real. They kept claiming they were real, that they saw fairies down there.
So it's like, why are you lying? You're too young to like really like want to hold this lie.
Right. So again, these are things to consider. So the clairvoyant went down and spent time, and he observed the whole glen, according to his account, was swarming with many forms of elemental life. He saw not only wood elves, gnomes, and goblins, but the rarer undines floating over the stream. Yeah, so he goes down there and sits by the brook and sees, like, everything that you'd want to see, apparently.
This is the clairvoyant.
This is the clairvoyant hired by...
This is the clairvoyant. Okay. Yeah. The psychic goes down and is like, I saw fairies. And we're like, yeah, of course.
I saw fairies. Yeah, and wood elves and gnomes and undines. The rare undines.
So it was very...
Not as opposed to the common elves and fairies that people see, you know, every other day. But I...
Yeah, so there's some very special mythological beings down there. Like, this is like the Hollywood section of L.A. This isn't just, like, Orange County basic, like, rich fairies. This
A-listers.
Is, like, the full-on, like, you know, Johnny Depp, Tom Hiddleston sort of,
I don't
like,
want to brag,
yeah,
but I saw not only the normal fairies, but the rare
I saw the undies.
So.
Yeah. I saw the Indian. You got something special. I do have a question. Geographically, so I don't know if you've heard of ley lines or meridian lines, but they are these like lines of power or energy that people say when you're on them, you're more likely to encounter weird energies and stuff. And this is part of like especially English folklore and UK folklore. So I wonder if like that area of the forest was like the convergence of some ley lines or whatever. It'd be interesting to look at a map and to see if that would line
up. Well, Doyle, I think, entertains kind of what you're talking about. He talks about the vibration theory as a working hypothesis. One could conceive that by raising or lowering the rate, the creatures could move from one side to the other of this line of material visibility, like a turtle coming up out of the water.
Yeah, definitely. Like shifting realms that are on top of each other. It has a lot of parallels to like the tenets of string theory, which is, you know, scientists, like some of them believe in it. It does break some rules, but I always like to like kind of think of string theory and the different energy levels in a similar Venn diagram sort of way. So perhaps that's what he was referencing for us.
That or
sure.
Like a frequency of sound. You know, there's some sounds we can't.
And
frequency of light, that whole spectrum. And so
At
the time, again, they're taking scientific things and trying to make them more.
Justify why.
Well, and he spends a whole chapter in his little book. This is Doyle again. He wrote a short book about this whole thing, and he has a whole chapter taking independent accounts from other people across England who talk about the fairies they saw, the dwarves they saw growing up, etc. But
I don't know. I mean, I'm very like optimistically skeptical about that. Do you remember that? A few nights ago, you guys, I was researching and I sent Forrest an article about how medieval stories from like the British Isles are much more preserved in manuscripts than anywhere else in continental Europe, simply because the island provides a safe ecosystem for not only culture, but also oral stories and the books that were written in special languages to be preserved. So I'm like, maybe that's why the folklore in England is so well known and so I don't know, it still seems more alive in that part of Europe than in other places that have been more globalized.
Yeah, Ireland too.
Like when you go out into Ireland, because that's even further to the west. for sure.
And it's a lot of just remote, rural people who just say it's normal to see fairies messing about. And
yeah, so maybe something about, like, an
Isabel's
island.
Been to Ireland. And
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense that these photos were taken there.
Yeah,
so anyways,
sorry. We're
derailed you, but where are we going with this?
So eventually this all just kind of pittered out. Like, the national interest died out because there's no way to really conclude anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you either believed or you didn't. Mm-hmm. The girls grew up, got married, moved on with their lives. One more thing before all that, before it kind of ended, Edward Gardner visited one more time and brought an occultist with him, and new cameras and whatnot. And by then, the girls were pretty obviously just tired of all this attention and, you know, these men showing up and saying, show us the fairies. You know, for young women that, or young people, that became kind of a chore. They did not claim to see any fairies at this event, but the occultist, a man named Jeffrey Hodson, saw them everywhere and wrote a bunch of notes of all the things he saw. So you can just imagine these girls, for the upteenth time, people coming and them sitting and,
It kind of reminds me of, like, Charlotte's Web, in a way, where, like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember Charlotte's Web, but people kept, like, the spider kept spinning, like, words into her web, and then people kept coming to the farm, and, you know, more word was heard about this phenomenon. So people are gaining it, like, they're starting to look. It's becoming a bigger deal.
Yeah, and the girls were burnt out. And so they grew up. Arthur Conan Doyle died in the 1920s at some point, I think, and to his grave, I guess he believed it was real, but he kind of exits the stage, and nothing really comes of this until decades later in the 60s, a newspaper reporter for the Daily Express tracks down Elsie and asks her about this whole, you know, big thing in her childhood that she claimed to have seen. And Elsie said that the fairies may have been figments of her imagination, but she left open the possibility she believed that she'd somehow managed to photograph her thoughts. So she believed she manifested what she saw and took pictures of it. These were called thought forms. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that term.
No, I haven't.
I kind of understand that, though. Like, what she's saying, because I feel like as a kid, I don't know, maybe you'd have that, is that you'd be like playing or something in the woods, and I would be just like so convinced that like I was hanging out with like fairies or all these different things, like, you know, in your like imaginative creative world you create as a child. So I maybe it's like what she's saying is like, I believed it so much that when maybe I photographed it, it caught it on camera like a ghost.
I get that
so interesting
for sure.
Because childhood belief is so intense. Like, in that line, you don't even ask yourself, like, if it is true or not. At least when I was little, I didn't even go there. I was just kind of like, I love these things, and I'm going to play with them and, like, draw pictures of them and everything. And there was never that logical, like, is this imagination hope, or is this actually, like real happening? Like, I didn't even think about it, and because I was a kid. So that's lovely. I was not aware that she said that.
So that was in the 60s, and we skip along ahead to the 80s. Both these women are, you know, getting toward the end of their life, and they admitted to a magazine that the photographs were fake, but they maintained that they really saw fairies. So they said, we saw fairies, we played by that brook, and we saw them all over the place, but the photos were fake. It was showing what we experienced. Another twist to this, though, is that there were 5 photographs, and both girls, Frances and Elsie, agreed that the first 4 were fake. But Elsie maintained that Frances insisted that the 5th one was real. So they both said the first 4 were fake. The final one, which was, neither one of them were in that photo, it was just the fairies.
Could you imagine that? Just like playing around, like, let's do a little photo shoot. And then like towards the end, like there's an actual fair, and you're like, oh my God, whoa. Set up a sign. What is that? It's an undine. It's a rare undine.
We did.
Yeah, it's like a Twilight Zone or something.
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
It's like, don't play too much with the Ouija board because you may just, like, summon something. Like, don't say Bloody Mary in front of a mirror because, you know, you may conjure.
Yeah.
You may. Oh, that is so fascinating.
So cool.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
And Francis, in defense of this, said it was a wet Saturday afternoon and we were just mooching about with our cameras and Elsie had nothing prepared.
Like,
meaning they hadn't brought any cardboard cutouts or whatever. I saw these fairies building up in the grasses and just aimed the camera and took a photograph. That's as simple as that. That's her defense of that fifth photo was real. And the question is, why would she lie at the end of her life after they both had confessed everything? They both had confessed the other four were fake. They'd drawn, traced maybe illustrations from fairy books
and pasted
them to cardboard. Mm-hmm. And took pictures with them, and then they would just toss them in the stream. That's another thing I didn't mention earlier, that they would look, their father and other people were like, where are these little dolls they've made?
Yeah.
And they couldn't find them, and it's because they would chuck them in the water, and it would just wash away.
We must destroy the bodies. We must get rid of the evidence. Throw the fairy body in the stream. Okay.
So in another interview, go ahead.
Like,
I have something
to say. Listeners, please look at these photos. They are incredibly well done. And if you look at the age of these girls too, like, I understand that their parents were probably very creative, so they had a lot of innate artistic skill, but they look very, very real. Like, I don't know, like, who, here's the whole thing too. They would, if it was a published book that they were cutting fairy illustrations out of by some illustrator, we could have traced those fairies to a book. Right, there would have been a publishing house that would have had art in it that these girls took and used. They didn't find that. Mm-hmm. So that would have meant that they not only had to cut out the photographs, they had to have painted these realistic looking fays in these photos as children, you know. I don't know if you guys want to see my drawings around when I was that age. They're not good. Like, they're not realistic at all on the level that these are. So if these girls were that artistically talented...
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit, Hope, because I was there.
How old are these girls? How old are these girls when they were taking the photos?
The older cousin who did the drawings was 16 or 17.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
Like,
yeah.
The younger
I was thinking they were like
12.
8 and 10. Okay, 12. Yeah, 16 could...
12 and 16.
Okay, so I guess they could have painted those too, but I don't know what their artistic proclivities were like. So I'm just...
They are really well done, really
I'm
well made.
I'm saying they're really
I have something to say.
Yes, Isabel,
an idea, which I don't like doing because, you know, I'd rather just believe everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, like, looking at the photos now. Mm-hmm. And is there any way, like, this fifth photo, could it have been some sort of, like, double exposure? And then they didn't realize?
You mean they took a
very,
film?
Very well spotted, yes. I think that's what people think about the fifth photo.
Yeah, because it's just like a bit, everything's like the fairies are a bit more like see-through and it almost
more
looks
hazy.
Like, yeah, it was double exposed.
And both girls claim to have taken that last photo. And it could be possible that they both had taken separate photos that the double exposure.
That merged together.
Right, right.
Okay, yeah. I'll be sharing this
on
our Instagram,
good eye.
You guys.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, so... We'll wrap this up, but at the end of their life, Francis, the younger one, said, I never even thought of it as being a fraud. It was just Elsie and I having a bit of fun, and I can't understand to this day why they were taken in. They wanted to be taken in. Mm. That was her kind of defense of herself, like, we weren't trying to trick anybody.
People wanted to believe it to be real.
Adults needed magic because they were dealing with war, they were dealing with the depression as well. What year were these taken in, Forrest?
The 17 through 19.
Okay.
Not quite the depression
okay, never
yet.
Never mind. Yeah, I mean, they were dealing with World War I.
Well, and these men are coming from religious and spiritual backgrounds, wanting to use these to prove something that they suspect about the world, or, you know, want to prove.
Exactly.
And these girls are being taken to these meetings and put on stages, and
so it's almost like when you
they're compelled to just keep it going at this point, yeah, instead of saying this, yeah, none
because
of this
also
is true.
When you have these adults with like a full-on agenda.
Well, and you have Arthur Conan Doyle, who might be the biggest celebrity in England at that time.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
one of them.
Yeah, no, I would not. I wouldn't be like, yeah, just joking.
It sucks. Yeah, right. it would definitely suck to be scared. Like, actually, I was lying. You know what I mean? Like, especially when you see like, oh, okay, I'm getting acclaimed, but then also I'm going to let people down. You know, they could probably see like, oh, all of these people really want to believe in this, and like our little art project got out of hand, let's just roll with it, because then we'll be able to prove it, you know?
Right.
But that being said, like, okay, so these men might have had an agenda, but then look at how the people who were buying these newspapers and these stories, the general public, who were probably more normal than Mr. Conan Doyle and the psychic, they wanted this story to be true. They were fascinated by it. Like, these girls were answering a deep need in society to find some proof of a greater meaning in life, you know? Because if these elementals, if these fairies are real, what other doors does that open?
Right.
Quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, there's something in the human spirit that isn't, you know, wants to explore and discover, and we don't want to have just found the answers and we're done. You know, we've exhausted all possible explanations for everything. There's nothing else to be learned. No one likes that. They want to keep learning and discovering new things, right?
Oh, 100%.
Uncovering secrets.
Yeah. So it's...
So...
Yeah, sorry, you go
ahead.
You go first.
Well, I was just going to wrap it up in terms of what do we think the truth was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, give us our options.
So here are the options. Number one, obvious one, it was a hoax that two young girls got caught up in. Their confessions later on in life are genuine. Number two, the fairies were thought forms, figments of the girls' imaginations, made visible. They're some sort of psychic, you know, crossing over of not that fairies are real, but that their imagination manifested in some visible way that photography was able to capture.
Yeah, so listeners, we have two options here. We have two options.
Well, and then the third one.
Oh, there's a third, okay.
The last one is that they were telling the truth. The first four photographs were fake, but the fifth was real, as Francis claimed. They really did see fairies down there, and they took pictures as sort of a wish fulfillment, you know, to prove to others, but they couldn't do it until kind of what we were saying earlier, like a twist at the end, they, on that fifth photo, did actually capture what they had been seeing. And one of the girls, Elsie, couldn't take the attention anymore and said, no, it's rubbish too, but the younger one, Francis, was kind of like, this really was, we finally got it. We finally got the shot.
Kind of like the Polar Express.
I'm not familiar, but okay.
Sorry. If anybody's seen the Polar Express, you remember the ending. Thanks for listening. So, okay, Isabel, would you like to say where you land, and then I can go, and then Forrest? Because we have three people, so we won't be able to tie. And we have to choose one of these. So you go.
I think... Also, for anyone who, because I'm just remembering now as we're talking about this more, is there was a movie that I used to be obsessed with, and it's based off of, these girls.
I know you're speaking.
And it's, like, their story. Mm-hmm. Do you know? I think it's called Fairy Tale or something.
Yes, I've watched
it. I don't know if it's still good. I really want to rewatch it now, but I would watch that movie all the time. And I think in the movie, they kind of, like, go for the third option a little bit. Like, that's what they depict, is that these girls just, like, really believed in these fairies, had this relationship with them. The adults couldn't see them. They were just, like, in this world and, like, created these friends and, like, went to, like, create these photos to, like, capture what they had. And I think I want to believe that one.
Okay.
I think they did have a great time with the fairies down by the brook. And then they were, like, commemorating, like, this relationship they had with these fairies by, like, painting them and celebrating them.
That's lovely.
In art, as you do.
And listeners, Isabel's referring to Fairy Tale, a true story, made in 1997. I love that they, like, made, like, the subtitle, A True Story.
That movie was so... I need to rewatch it because that movie, they built this like crazy fairy house. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, one? I remember it. So it.
And I got so into building.
Like, yeah, this is a great film, you guys. It only got 57% on Rotten Tomatoes, but don't let that dissuade you. Don't let that dissuade you. You can watch it on Stars with a subscription, or you can just simply pay $2.99 for an hour and 39 minutes of pure joy. So, Isabel.
Worth it.
Yeah, that is...
Worth every penny.
That is lovely, because I feel like you definitely saw fairies growing up. Like, your mind was so open.
I feel like I did. I was very... Yeah.
Yeah, you would go on...
I mean, I was, like, not to sound crazy, but I was very convinced I could, like...
You would tell me about tiny fairies that would live in the fruit bowl in your kitchen, and I would sit there, and I would be like, wow, and you're like, they're tiny, like an inch tall, and I would tell my mom, like, so Isabel sees fairies, Mom, and she's like, yeah, I bet she does. And and I was just like, yeah, she's so
Thanks,
weird, but
Tammy,
I love,
I'm glad she...
I love, can I do another play date with Isabel? Yeah, so I love that. I'm going to go, I think I'm going to go with like option number two, which is like in the middle, where it's kind
the
of
the psychic
thought forms. Yeah, the psychic thought forms. So it's kind of a balance between like maybe there was some sort of like energy thing that can be tied into quantum mechanics eventually. Like maybe there are these things and they're real, but they're not real in the sense of like our modern understanding of like the physical realm. And so what I think happened was the girl's mother, who is part of that society, was actually a witch and was a practicing one. And so she and so
perfect, we had to find a way to bring a witch in.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch? But I've already told you I'm not a witch at all. Witches are old and ugly.
This is just a hypothesis, you know, it's like a very well-researched, thought-out hypothesis, and those can be broken, but I'm just saying that I think that she could have definitely, like, hinted and kind of, like, engendered the girl's love of story, love of fairy, and sort of gave them, you know, this like, power to generate those ideas, you know, because you always need, like, a mentor or a guide, I feel like, and so... Maybe all children have the potential to see fairies, but just the fact that this mother was involved with this like weird Hindu like cult religion thing, it's like, well, she definitely wasn't like the average Edwardian lady who's wearing corsets and drinking tea and stuff. A very magical woman. So I think that she had something to do with this girl's sort of experience out in the woodlands. So that's gonna be that's where I'm coming from. Forest, what do you think?
Well, what gets me is that Frances, even to her dying day, said she really did see fairies on the fifth photograph was real. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that? How do you admit that it was all a hoax, except not at the last, like the last one wasn't?
Yeah, it's so random that it's just like, what's the point of that lie? It's so illogical that it's just like, what?
Yeah. What's motivating
her? Yeah, it's like, what integrity do you have to keep at this point, you know? Like,
yeah.
What
do you have to lose?
It's not even a grand lie. It's not even a grand lie. It's just kind of like, no, it's like, you know, 20% real.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have nothing to gain from it. So, I don't know. It's just, it's weird. That's a weird little kind of hiccup to the whole thing, because it almost ties up nice and neatly that these women eventually admit, yeah, we were just kids playing a game and everyone took us seriously, but then one of them was like, no, with a twinkle in her eye, the last one was real. And and even earlier both said they saw fairies. They only admitted to the photographs being fake. So I'm inclined to go with option three, like Isabel.
Wow.
That they were playing a game, they were being, you know, creative and little artists and kind of having fun, but it was based on something that was real to them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. To them specifically, or do you think it could be something that's like, you know, they were just tapping into it, but it's a realm that existed outside of just their imagination?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think that it did exist and they were tapping into it, because I think kids are very... You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like option two...
They're connected more.
Yeah, I feel like option two and option three, like, definitely overlap in a Venn diagram sort of way, where it's like, there's something going on there, we just don't know how to put it into words quite yet.
Yeah, we just don't know how to, like, fully reach it.
Dear listeners, if thou should be so inclined to tell us what you think. We would love to hear your thoughts. We'll put a poll up on our Instagram. We also want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts to Forrest, the mossy rock who came on here to tell us this wonderful tale of intrigue and magic and leyline delight. Forrest, so wonderful. And if you guys would like to propose an idea for our next podcast topic, or perhaps even let us know if you have interest in being a special guest, please reach out. It's FarBeyondPod on Instagram, and then our email will be linked on the description, as well as the lovely work of Forrest. His writings and his illustrations are quite a rabbit hole to fall down, so I highly recommend you guys go check those out. And Forrest, is there anything you'd like to add to this episode?
No, except that, you know, thank you both for having me on. It's a lot of fun to talk about weird bits of history based on fairies with other people.
Yeah, our favorite.
I don't know where you go to have those conversations except here.
The internet.
Except this podcast, yeah.
The podcast.
And everyone, stay tuned for our Hope and I's recreation of these photos.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we are going to be doing a New York photo shoot very, very soon, yeah, before the end of the year.
Next to the subway.
Yes. Well, we'll actually just generate them. All we have to do is like imagine hard enough and they will appear in our photographs. So yeah. Forrest, if you take this any photos down in your Alabama woodlands, like, I'm sure there's magic there, so share those with us. We need more evidence. If you guys have photos of fairies, please send those to our social media. That would be wonderful, and we will propagate
don't
the
let
word.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's life be a waste.
Yeah, we must continue his good
That's
work.
We right. have to prove it true. Continue his work.
Keep Arthur Conan Doyle's legacy alive as a fairy believer.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, toodles. Thank you for tuning in. And
thanks for joining us, Forrest, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. Goodbye.